going to talk about how to balance work and leisure, because none of us have enough time for leisure. How do you balance or set boundaries around work? How do you even consider having some time just filled with non-obligation? So it's those last 2 weeks that we'll really get into. What do you do with all of this? Yeah, great. Work is important. It's God calls us to work and to work well. He also calls us to leisure, to rest. So I'm particularly looking forward to those 2 weeks. And one of your homework questions, if I forget to tell you, like last time I forgot to tell you your homework, but is really this. How do you grow leisure time? How do you move work, obligation time, how do you move that more toward the leisure end? How do you balance work and leisure? And I'd love for you to bring little anecdotes of how you fought for a rest time, or to put boundaries around your work, or even to change your attitude in some of that semi-leisure stuff to move it more toward pleasure than obligation. Happy anniversary, by the way, Craig and Betsy. Was it yesterday?
Today.
Today? Oh, very good. Well, I don't know a song for anniversaries, but happy anniversary. Let's open in prayer, and then we'll get to work. Father, thank you that you are not just a God who calls us to work richly and for your glory, but and hard, I guess, but also to rest and to, well, you call us to that. Help us take that seriously and help us be able to do it, because it feels like we're just caught in a system that doesn't give room to breathe. Would you use today toward that end? Would you convince us that it's good to want and desire and seek pleasure, and help us this week even have some snippets of that? We ask this in the name of Christ our King. Amen. I feel like I'm missing something. I think it's my glasses. I forgot I'm at home. I just feel like I'm half here. So please bear with me and blame anything that I say foolishly on that. I just want to take a couple minutes to review. Last week we looked at what leisure is. How do we define leisure? And sort of basing it on God himself, in particular the first few chapters in the scripture, God teaches us that he's a God of rest. He punctuates his work with rest. So one of the things that we see in leisure is that it's free time. Time where there's separated from work, where you can just pause. But it's more than that. It's also active. God wasn't just sitting around, but he was enjoying. He was delighting in. So there's an activeness. You fill that free time with something. We'll come back to that a little bit later today. You fill that time. Even if you don't choose how to fill that time, you do fill it with something. So work is free time, is activity, and then of quality of life. God wants us to be whole people, not just workers, but to be able to enjoy beauty, to express ourselves, to learn more than just our, you know, for me, it's more than just being a preacher, but learn to enjoy the nature. Take other gifts and skills and hone those too. Those are some of the things that leisure does. So that we become a whole people, full people, joy-filled people, having our work punctuated with rest. So those are a couple things, sort of definition of leisure. I mentioned that the pattern of God's rest, and you see that throughout the scripture. We're going to see that this morning, actually, in Zechariah 14. I'm going to be tempted to go into the leisure class there, but there's this thing called the Feast of Tabernacles, where God says, Israel, I want you to take a week off. Go build some little tents out in the desert. And there's reasons for all of that. But what he says is feast, have a good time, rejoice, rejoice greatly. I'm like, really, God says that? I didn't think he was like that. But no, he wants us to enjoy life as well. It's not just the sweat of our brow. So I find that really neat. Where Jesus himself was caricatured as a... was a wine bibber and a friend of how's it go? Well, a glutton and a drunkard. That's Jesus' characteristic. Now, it wasn't true, but he hung out with people who were enjoying life. And I think there's an invitation there for us to see pleasure, leisure, as a good thing. That was last week. And then one last thing, the value of non-utilitarian stuff. Utility is the big word underneath there. There's a purpose for everything. And so anything that you do, you have to, there has to be a cause or a reason for it. But when Jesus says, consider the lilies of the field, lilies don't do anything. I don't think you can eat them. I don't think you can decorate much with them. Or even if you decorate with them, there's no purpose except for enjoyment. And so God has, again, throughout the scripture, he created the garden in the beginning for pleasure. It was pleasant to look upon. So all those things put together, you see that God has charged us to do more than just stuff that counts as far as purpose, utility, reason. So that's where we went last week. Today I want to spend a little bit of time looking at, can we do leisure wrongly? We'll get more into that later. But to begin, maybe I'd just like to see if any of you were moved to do anything differently this past week, just thinking about leisure. Has anything changed? A little testimony time, right? Oh, make us all nervous. But just as you reflect, maybe a shift in attitude or just thinking about something, or there was a particular practice. You know what? Yeah, that's something that we should do. I'm going to try to do differently. Any little stories? I'll tell you, now for me, it's a little bit easier. You have to wait for your Saturday for about 5-6 days. My Saturday was Monday. And so the first thing Laura and I did Monday was, it was actually quite hard. This could sound weird. We said, listen, this is our day off. Let's start the day by making a little fire and having an hour and a half just leisure time where we're allowed to just sit. Just not plan a day, which is really hard. I'm a planner. I like to make lists Monday morning. And not to start our accomplishments. No, let's put the brakes on. And just, if God calls us to rest, to leisure, to enjoy, then let's enjoy some time with the family. And to sit there for an hour and a half, it was difficult because I got all kinds of little projects I want to do. I want to get done. This is valuable time. And God says that too, right? This is valuable time. And some of that time is meant to be spent being refreshed. So that's one little thing for us that I enjoy. I don't know if we're going to do it again, probably, but it's hard. It's a discipline to fit in, carve out leisure time. And anything on your end? Somebody, please. I got an email this past week from someone who was sort of forced into leisure time through various circumstances and really has enjoyed that, where I can't do all that I had been doing, and that's really been refreshing to her. I won't share the whole email because I didn't get permission, but that's another neat little story. Anything else, attitudes, things that struck you? Are you still waking up? All right, well, to really nail it this time, and next week you'll have to share your stories with me.
I read some. My daughter and son-in-law took me for a long ride into West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just very relaxing.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, just Libby's daughter and son-in-law, right? Took her for a long ride just to West Virginia and just to enjoy the beauty of God's creation. That's the kind of thing I think we need to push to preserve or to cultivate. All right. Well, you can email me if you're too shy to talk. You haven't been in the past, but let me then move us forward a little bit. Where do you think we do leisure badly or poorly? As you think about leisure, carving out time to be refreshed, time to enjoy, where do you think we do leisure poorly? Where could we do better? I'm going to wait till you talk. I'm just going to wait.
We squeeze it
in. I'm sorry?
We squeeze it in.
We squeeze it in. Mm-hmm. Yeah, got to jam it in, squeeze it in. There's really not any room for it. Right, which probably speaks to priorities. Somebody else was going to say something.
I was.
Yeah.
I feel like leisure applies to... Well, I realize it's to more than myself, because yesterday I was working, and I noticed that to come home and find that Tom can actually enjoy the day. Whereas I had a list of things I thought he should do.
Yeah.
I just realized that, you know,
yeah, I think that's so true, though. When somebody else has taken...
Give me the list, though.
You're just supposed to know the list. That's how it goes, right? But when somebody else is enjoying leisure time, I think it's very easy to be jealous or critical. You are wasting time. I remember that with my dear dad. He's with the Lord now, so he's probably having true leisure. But why are you just sitting there? Do something useful. Make good use of your time. Well, I was reading a book. Isn't that okay? And what if it wasn't a theology, but what if it was a novel? That's in me all over the place. That's probably why I find taking an hour to just sit with the family tough. But I think there is that. We can easily look at others askance when they're, what did you do Saturday? Well, why didn't you do everything that? I think we resonate with that. Yeah. And anything else? Yeah.
I don't know if this is more of a mom thing, but look forward to relaxing, let's say, at 9 o'clock at night. And then you always get interrupted from that. Like, it never really happens. I can find myself getting snippy with the kids. Like, I'll even say, okay, I started at 9.
Right.
You know that. You should ask me that already. So, yeah, I mean, sometimes it's difficult attitude-wise. You have to be spontaneous. You can't always plan it.
Right. And I think probably a lot of us feel that frustration of finally having some leisure time, and it gets interrupted. And you just want to blow up. Sometimes we do. Emily?
I can't help but thinking about it from a missions perspective. Like, I think Americans typically tend to go into other countries and think, okay, efficiency, where can we get money? What can we bring in to fix these problems? But what I've found, especially in Latin America, where the culture is so much slower, they really appreciate taking a lot of this leisure time to just talk to people. And then I've found that through so much waiting and stillness and just almost wasting time with them, it's shown me what the needs are, and then God will speak to me and show me how to actually work. But it takes so much more of that stillness before purposefully going into mission.
I wonder if that's something we might return to, where you have time to ponder, to hide yourself away, which would give you time to reflect on why you're doing what you're doing, what you should be doing, so that when you return to work, you do it with a, dare I say, more leisurely attitude. Not work slacking, I don't mean, but where you're approaching work perhaps from a richer perspective of, yeah, I'm gonna do today to please the Lord, and there's a little more freedom in the work, and maybe a little bit less burden. I'd like to chew on that a little bit more. Maybe some of you guys can bring it back up or chew on it yourself and tell me what you think. Let's move a little bit further then, and that is just with this. Why do you think we do leisure poorly? We've touched on some of that last week, but why do you think we find leisure, I think, generally tough? Yeah. So, yeah, Matt.
You live in a world where you focus on the negative. As soon as we start talking about leisure, we start talking about wasting time. That's a negative meaning. And it just seems like we focus on the negative a lot faster. Well, that comes to mind a lot. If I take a couple of minutes to just stop doing something, why is that a waste of time?
Right.
It's not a waste of time for me. I guess that's a bad way to look at it.
I think it's probably not a waste of time, or it may not be a waste of time for God either, where he says you should punctuate your day even with rest. Yeah, there's an addiction to the clock. I think that's some of what drives that. Part of that's the Industrial Revolution and some of the negative part of that. But this pagan, you're on the clock. It means you better be efficient the whole day, work hard the whole day. But do you get breaks? And then I think for many of us, do you take the breaks you're given? I got to be efficient. The negative of, I think a lot of it's guilt. Feeling guilty that you've fritter time away when actually what you're doing is refreshing your body, refreshing your mind. Mm-hmm. Any other answers to the why leisure is difficult, we don't do it well? Michael?
Are you mean for Christians? Us here in particular, like Muslim, vegetarian, what I mean? Because in the culture, it's just the opposite, I think. When I went to the manager in stores, you know, you're always a good client sick. And you know they're not sick. And, you know, despite the unemployment problem, there's some people don't want to work. They brought it to that unemployment. And, you know, I mean, as a culture, I think we come hard up with it all. We embrace it. We idolize it. We don't like stuff. And, yeah, I think that's one of the reasons women don't want to have children nowadays. Why don't we still grant them?
Yeah, you raise an interesting contrast. We have in our culture both extremes, and I suspect that in the church, or at least in the I don't know if I want to say the older generation, but those who aren't maybe postmodern, can I even say that? There's a real strong work ethic. If you want to be something, you need to accomplish. You need to build yourself up and work hard. Whereas the other side is very strong in our culture too, where you owe life to me. I shouldn't have to work. And leisure is idolized. So you've both of those in our culture, which makes it pretty interesting to try to teach on. Because it's not one or the other. It's you see both in that. I suspect some of you have that in your own families, where you see that both poles, workaholics and leisureaholics. And yet, I think true leisure and true work, we're trying to raise both of those as far as both are significant. God calls us to work hard, to work well for His glory, but He also calls us to rest richly for His glory. And I think there's a lot of that comes down to time. How do we steward our time? Do we throw it all into leisure, which can easily become selfishness? And do we throw it all into work, which again can easily become selfishness? All right. Anything else to add? Otherwise, I'm going to jump in here a little further, look at the crisis of leisure. And then a little, very brief history of leisure. Yeah, Dave, you really got to hold your hand up high in the back there.
I would just mention that my dad was a missionary kid, so he's kind of bicultural. Mm-hmm. And he was the team leader for a couple of short trips, mission trips back down to Mexico. And one thing that he pointed out was we're here to build relationships. And I think as Americans, we tend to get very goal-focused. We're here to, you know, construct a church. Or we're here to lay block and get to this point before we leave. And he said, number one, we're here to build relationships. And I think that's what the Mexican culture kind of appreciates more, is relationships than getting goals done. And sometimes I think their culture can go too far the other direction.
Right.
But I think the type of leisure that they have is more relationship-focused. And I think sometimes in the States, it can be more self-centered-focused when you're trying to do leisure. Like, I'm going to go play a video game by myself for 4 hours or something.
Right, right. They are fun, though. But we probably won't get to it later, but one of the aspects that Ryken paints in his book is that leisure is social. Not all, but there's a significant aspect of leisure that is social. The government even recognizes this. They have nature preserves, so you can go out and check out birds or other things. They have parks. They build playgrounds. They see this as something that we need. It's a social thing. It also has a lot of repercussions for family, leisure in the family. You have the most potential for shared leisure time in a family unit. Even more for work, if you're conscientious about it. But also friendships. Imagine friendships without any leisure time. It's you can do it, but there's something that really enriches when you have shared leisure time, whether it's over a meal, hospitality. So that's significant. And even in the church, there are a lot of leisure aspects to the church as far as rest and refreshment. So we probably won't get much further into that. But let me look for a minute at the crisis of leisure. I think early on, maybe the first class, I skimmed over these, and I had them on the outline last week. We just didn't get to them. But the first one is there's just not enough leisure. And the biggest reason probably behind that is there's just not enough time. When you add the commute times, when you add the hours of work that we have, on top of all the other things that need to get done at home, the list just never ends. And there's a couple of ingredients to this. Why there's no time for leisure? Well, there's probably a whole bunch of reasons. So maybe I'll start with you guys again. Why do you think we don't have time? What's stealing our time away? Because people throughout all ages have had the same 24 hours a day. I'm pretty sure, at least. We probably have more because we have lights. So why do we have less time? When we have electricity, we can stay up till midnight.
Our priorities.
Okay. What do you think our priorities are then, if they're not leisure?
The church, for one thing.
Okay. Yep.
Work.
Yeah, work, church, there are other good but obligating things. Uh-huh. Why else don't we have time for leisure? Yeah, Dan.
I think it's kind of simple in America. I mean, it's just, you know, it's personal market succeeds. So if you know your competitor is going to come to market sooner than you are with something, you're going to die if you don't have something there. At the same time, so they're just real deadlines you have to meet.
Yep.
And it's just a constant cycle. Whoever's willing to work harder and faster to get something done succeeds,
and it's a vicious cycle. Then, if you want to survive, you have to put in the extra hours so that you can compete and still stay ahead of your competitors.
In certain industries, you don't work.
Right. Oops, I thought I. Do that, and I think you're going to say something. Don't touch your hair. Yeah, Ron.
Just following up on that, too, even if you don't subscribe to the theory, or say you want to not be a part of that, we live in a place where everyone around you is in that environment. So housing prices are higher, fuel prices are higher, everything else is crazy. You have to work as hard just to pay your bills also, because
right.
of the Washingtonian mentality.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. You can, if you want to live anywhere near here, it's just going to be expensive. Even if you're renting somebody's garage, it's still expensive. I find it astronomical how much you pay for a one-bedroom apartment here, but even more toward D.C. Are there any things that we can change, though? Are there any choices when it comes to the use of our time that we do have some control over? Because a lot of these things, there's little control over. You need to keep your job. You need to live in a home, and it needs to be heated at least, you know, a couple of days of the year. Are there any things that we have some control over?
I think we set aside
time. Yeah, right. We can set aside time. And
just spend with your family, enjoying each other,
Right, and so the goal is to set aside that time. We'll touch more on some of the hows next week of how do you do that. And let me jump, you were going to say something too, I think.
I was going to say our standards. Sometimes we can be perfectionists and not accept a lower standard, and then we stress ourselves out trying to get to this high standard.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, standards, you have a lot of choice over the standard of living. And a lot of that can be, a lot of that's more choice than we think it is. We feel the pressure and the context in which we live. We have to hit a certain thing. We have to do certain things. I think that's something we need to come back to when it comes to, I don't have time. Alex, or was it, yeah, let's go with Alex first.
I think we have choices over the activities which happen to be leisure for our kids. We have choices over those. Mm-hmm. We have to be in, or music and sport. Those are all leisure things for our kids, but you have some hope. Right? And there's the same thing in the church. You have to be doing, three, four different things or not.
Right.
Yes, it's all good, but
right.
You have choice.
Yeah, the choices over the leisure that we do, kids' sports, activities you're involved in, and church too. Just a minor aside, but you can be too busy in church. You can be involved in too much stuff so that it's taking away from refreshment and rest. If you have a program for every night of the week, you should not be in every single program. You should not be. Because you're not going to have time for all sorts of stuff. Family, witnessing, refreshment, run.
I think there are some things we do that are so ingrained in how we live every day that we don't realize we have time.
Mm-hmm.
Just get rid of the television.
Mm-hmm.
We'll probably add hours to people's week. Say, well, I have to go to Starbucks to get a coffee in the morning. That's 15, 20 minutes. I mean, there's little things that chip away.
Right.
And we don't even realize we do it popping over and over and over part of the routine.
Yeah, there's a lot of hidden little times that we just are used to. Amy?
Back to the kids' sports. It's like funny, I'm at that stage now at the ages of our kids where what used to be leisure is becoming like work. Kids' sports aren't just fun anymore. It's a job, and
right.
you have to drive to get there. You pay a lot of money to do it. They have all this pressure for travel teams or not. I mean, it's
right.
really hard to set boundaries and say no. You want to explain to your children that you can do this much, but not this much. You can pick one or two.
Yep.
You can't do five different activities. Cause
right.
they expect them to be like professionals. Be like as a job.
Right.
It's harder too when you have a desire to help or coach.
Right.
You know that you can't put that much time into it as maybe you did when you were younger.
Right. It's interesting how, and this is probably a hint for me to move on, but even our leisure can become work-like, where our sports, now we need our kids to become professional athletes, where it used to be really for fun and refreshment. And there's a drivenness. We do that with a lot of our leisure. It's not just kids' sports. It's just an easy example to use. But even photography, you want to take pictures, well, you take 1,500 of them so you can get the best one. And it's not, you don't enjoy the environment. You just, I got to get a good picture. And go. And then you got to clean up 1,000 of them when you get home. And it becomes work. And I love digital cameras. I actually get a couple of good pictures every once in a while. But it's a whole shift from what's meant to be leisure refreshment. The attitude becomes work and obligation now. I probably mentioned this point before, but I think it bears repeating. Reichen writes, the amount of genuine leisure available in a society is generally in inverse proportion to the amount of labor-saving machinery it employs. So the more labor-saving stuff you have, the busier you're going to be. You know, what do you mean? I don't need to spend a whole day doing my laundry anymore. The example he gives is and maybe I use this, but I think it's worth repeating. So if I used it, just enjoy it again. But he uses the example of buying a boat. You know what? Our family, we'd like to buy a boat, so we have some leisure time. We go down on, what do you got over here, Chesapeake Bay, and it'll be wonderful. We'll go fishing, and okay, well, now you got to work a little extra so you can get that boat. It's got to be big enough to get on the bay. And you need a motor, and it needs servicing, and the boat needs cleaning, and you have to get it there. Oh, so we need a trailer. You buy a trailer, but now you've just got a minivan, it's not going to carry, you got to get a bigger SUV. It's grown, and you got to maintain it. Now you got to park it in the winter, so you use your neighbor's garage or whatever. Just one small little, sell the thing and rent a boat. It'd be simpler. But in very small ways, I don't think we often consider the cost of stuff. And I don't mean just how much it costs you, but just in terms of, I built a deck on my house, which was, I loved it. For me, it was leisure. But I didn't think about, I'm going to have to stain that thing every year. I'm going to have to repair it. I had to clean it. I got to sweep the sand from the kids off of it every week. There's all sorts of extra little things now that I didn't really consider. And so our house becomes full of stuff, and we have so much stuff that we have to clean every single day. And it's not just vacuuming. It's getting the big thing that'll suck up all the toys, because you can go to the dollar store and get 500 of them for $3. I'm probably getting into a rant now, but I'm learning. I'm slowly being sanctified with that. But I think it would do us well to say, if we simplified, if we decluttered our lives of many of these things, it probably would end up giving us more time to enjoy our coffee on the back deck, or whatever it is for you. There are a couple other things here. Poor quality of leisure, I think Ron kind of hit at that already, as far as we're often so tired we just flop. And we don't think in terms of, I need to steward all the time God has given me, both work and leisure. And so our leisure ends up having sort of the lowest common denominator of leisure possible. We just turn on whatever's on TV, I'll watch. Or I might flip through the whatever's on there. But I'm not planning. It's not to refresh. It's just to sit. And so there's a very low, I think in the West particularly, low quality of leisure. We've looked, I think, a little bit too at the inability of to value leisure apart from work. Leisure is not viewed as an independent occurrence or even a complementary activity. Rather, it's placed over the tyranny of a work mentality. What am I trying to say here? We take something like going for a run. Can be a wonderful thing if you like running. And we turn it into a workout. The attitude now becomes, I gotta lose calories, or I gotta stay fit, or I gotta... And it loses that non-obligation. So our leisure activities, we associate them with work, and they sort of become dominated by this work ethic, utilitarian, instead of just running for the pleasure of running. I'm allowed to run. I choose to run today. So that there's... that's enough on that. I think a week ago we looked at the guilt over the enjoyment of leisure. We feel guilty. To take a, I don't know what you did Saturday, Tom, but to take a Saturday and have a leisurely Saturday, we can easily feel guilty. Now, not everybody does. Some people think every day should be that way, and they have other problems that they need to deal with, where sort of the high value of work. But that guilt ought not to be there. God designed as part of the fabric of who we are to enjoy leisure. And the last one there, leisure as idolatry, self-indulgence, endless weekends. We see that as well. Let me just finish this first point here, the crisis of leisure, with this. Leisure thrives when people believe that pleasure is a good thing and human fulfillment is godly. How would that change you if you saw pleasure as a good thing and human fulfillment as godly? Would you go watch some more shows, some more theater? Would you go just listen to some musicians? Would you pick up a good book? And not because you have to grow or maintain a job, or perhaps you would, and perhaps you should. I love that, where God wants us to be happy. He does. That's part of how we're designed to be, to enjoy what He's given us. All right, let me see what else I all have on here. I'm going to run through very briefly a history of leisure. You might remember we had a couple of friends when we did the history of work. I left those at home today because I expect this history to take us about 5 minutes, which means you're really going to have to hold on. There's less, I guess everybody's lived with both work and leisure. But there's just a lot less study done on leisure throughout the ages. But if we begin with the Greek, sort of one of the underpinnings of Western societies, the Greek and Roman, and as well as the Judeo-Christian mindsets, the Greeks had a fairly high view, a very high view of leisure that remains a good standard even today. It came at a very high cost. Slaves basically did the work so that they could have this elite leisure society, and that cost was deadly. I think it was sinful. Well, it was sinful. But the... they pursued this freedom from work in order to engage in the life of contemplation and culture. Leisure was a state of being in which an activity was pursued for its own sake. The Greeks were good at this, of enjoying culture, of enjoying becoming educated, understanding, enjoying music, being well studied in it. Also plays, thinking, and education, just to be a whole person. There's a standard there that I think we could probably learn much from. And yet there's a cost to that. And I think you can see that tension. Very few people have the ability to give themselves fully to leisure, even if it's very good leisure, because we have to work. But Reichen makes the point, at least in our day, a lot of stuff that might really help you cultivate the whole being is really cheap. You can get a book for a penny, $3 shipping, $3.99. But anybody can get a book. There are lots of books that are just given away for free. If you want to cultivate yourself and learn in other areas and become skilled in not just your work, but planting. Who reads books on plants these days? So they're really cheap. That access is really broadened in that way. So the Greek ideal of leisure as a fully developed person remains a standard for excellence in leisure today. That's Reichen's point. Now, when we look at the Romans, they picked up on some of that stuff, but they used it for their own purposes. They built stuff for, remember the Roman baths, we still see pictures of those today, theaters, amphitheaters. But what the ruling class began to do is the ruling class became a little more separated from the workers. They ended up trying to increase leisure as a means of entertaining and distracting potentially rebellious crowds. Where's the food? And so they throw parties for them. And what ends up happening in the Roman period is there's a lot of sort of low, very low common denominator entertainment, like the theaters, like the games. So there's this mass consumption mentality, a moral degrading of very trivial activities, sort of a low end of leisure. We won't go into more detail. When we move more into the Middle Ages, we looked at sort of asceticism in the medieval times, where contemplation is good, disciplining your body, and the view of leisure in this time period becomes fairly negative. Leisure presupposes the legitimacy of pleasure. If you're going to have leisure, you should see pleasure as a good thing. They didn't. Asceticism, sort of, don't eat much, don't drink much, smack yourself on the back in your little prayer closet, so on. It carries a very low regard of leisure, and that filters over even today. But let me just read from this fellow, Tertullian, a theologian way back when. He says, as for sports, never can you approve the foolish racing and throwing feats and the foolish jumping contests, like a high jump and long jump. You will hate men bred to amuse the idleness of Greece. And I think if there's a weakness in the Reformation, this is one of them, a low view of leisure. I suspect some of you have grown up in Christian homes, there's a distrust of much leisure activity. Reichen writes, there's a distrust of worldly amusements that has run strong in Protestants in every area of its history. I think we can probably, at least I can, relate to that. Pastimes are often equated with wasting time. Legitimate recreation is often legitimized, but only by making it part of your work. This will become useful to me. And yet the Renaissance, which I guess just after the Reformation, or sort of combined with it, but moving forward, there becomes this rebirth of these classical humanistic values, sort of an elevating again of leisure as a good thing. The arts and culture, a very high point during the Renaissance. We're flying. You're still seated, so that's good. When we move to the Industrial Revolution, you see that the view of culture and the arts is just dashed again. It's about production, getting stuff done, factories, and the utilitarianism is put on steroids. Time is money. Time is money. Use your time well, because it means you're wasting every minute. You're not doing something. You're wasting money. Well, I think you've probably heard that even today. And as we look at today, the 20th century, you could call it the age of leisure. I think, Michael, you alluded to that, where there's, you know, a couple of years ago, $262 billion a year spent in the States on leisure. Now, a lot of it's low grade. There's an expectation that you deserve a four-day weekend. You deserve to work 35 hours a week and be paid as if you're working 70 hours a week and so on. And that's a very brief, probably bald overview of the history of leisure. But I think you see, just like we saw with work, the sort of the cultural tide shapes our view of leisure as a church. And so we need to be careful of, what does the scripture say about leisure? Is there any value to the arts? Well, the Bible has something to say about that. God has something to say about that. And so we need to keep those two in tension, and I think raise both work and leisure, and appreciate both. Tom.
I don't mean to play down what you're saying here, but I mean, the people we're listening to the ideas of the people who actually were able to record them in history. I mean, medieval asceticism. You're talking about half of 1% of the world's population. 99% of the world's population were working like dogs and dying when they're 30, you know, during the Middle Ages.
Right. Well, and I think that, but they, why were they working like dogs? Because their job was to support the ascetics, to allow them to just have their life of contemplation. So they were stuck in that whole system, even though I don't know that they would agree with, yes, this is the best way to do it, but they were sacrificed to that system. And I think many of them, yeah, this is just, my job is to support the Pope, the monk, so they can do what they do. And I don't, they were, like we are, caught in a system. They too were caught in a system. We're caught in a system of trying to live in on the East Coast in a fast-paced society that, that values production. Yeah, Jacob.
In my point of view, I think Americans, well, living between Mexico and Canada, have a lot of spare time in comparison with Latin America. Latin American average worker works 10 hours, they spend 10 hours at work every day. And my dad used to leave the house at 6:30 and he used to come back at 8:30 every day. He's right now retired, so we're good. But that was the daily. Well, the, that was always. He used to come at 8:30. So that's the average.
Right.
And my Lauren gets home at 5:08 always. And me sometimes, when I work in the mornings, I get at 4. So I have a lot of time, and I don't know what to do with the time I have. And I'm bored. Yeah, most of the time. I think that's my idea.
Right. Well, and I think that's something we want to think about. For many of the people throughout history, they worked extremely hard and died much younger than we do, and yet we feel like we have no time for leisure. I think you need to chew on that. Why? Because if I think many of us could go back a generation or two in our own histories and see that very same thing where people worked and worked, they seemed to have very little time for any refreshment. So why is there anything that we can do to extend that? Because we do have some more freedoms than many others. Now, not everybody's in that situation where I think many here today could probably say, think of moms, for example. 15 hours a day, and it's still not done. And even many people who commute, they may not be working technically from 8 to 5 or whatever they do, but they leave because they have to drive an hour and a half to get there. So there's an extra 3 hours tacked on to their day. I think many people here today would say, yeah, that's me.
I think life has its seasons, though. I feel like I have more leisure now than I used to. I mean, there's no kids at home. Even when we had kids at home, they were never in the conveyor belt about kids. But our kids, by the time they were in the ninth grade, they decided they were team sports. They liked skateboarding. They liked riding their bikes. And we were fine with that. I didn't know.
Yep.
I wasn't at all that interested in producing a basketball player. So they kind of spent a lot of their time making their own fun, being outside.
Yeah.
You know, I used to think it would be great to sit down and watch a ball game with my sons, and within 5 minutes of having a baseball game out there, I was outside and played baseball. You could never get through the first inning.
Right, yeah. I think there's something there where we feel like we have to produce leisure, but a lot of times it can just happen. We're out of time. Well, obviously, we only got about halfway done today. Next week, there's no, you have a leisurely Sunday. You have an extra hour. Use it well, and we'll see you back in 10 minutes, and we'll pick this back up in 2 weeks.
Yeah.